ticked, there you are. Running for your life, you're a shooting star. All those years, no one knows just how hard you work. But now it shows that one shining moment you reached deep inside.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook, along with my boss, Mr. Scott Reynolds.
Hey, yo.
And we've got two guys in studio today. Mr. Matthew Matera, who is our intern extraordinaire.
Producer.
Producer extraordinaire.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
How we doing?
And Taylor Jenkins, who's just a guy.
I'm just a guy hanging out. Glad to be back.
Doesn't produce anything.
They were former interns. They're now part of the Pewter Report
staff.
Yes,
they are Pewter Report. I guess we can go ahead and announce that they're part of the Pewter Report staff. Not that we haven't already done that. But anyway, we've got both of these guys in studio with us as we're reporting live from One Buccaneer Place. Today is Thursday. And, guys, we've made 1 week of free agency. You know, my favorite pick so far or signing so far is, you know, the Buccaneers getting Landon Collins. I think that's really going to improve the safety position.
They didn't do that.
The good news is they got Tyrann Mathieu, so they took care of the safety.
They didn't get him either. These guys are too expensive, Mark.
C.J. Mosley?
They brought John Lynch back.
No, John Lynch actually helped the Buccaneers by taking Quan Alexander off their hands.
Oh, boy.
What, $14.5 million?
$13.5, but okay. Who's counting?
I know.
Right? I mean, there was some really, you know, a lot of Buck fans, not a lot, but there were some Buccaneer fans that are upset the Buccaneers didn't make some of those splash signings that I was joking about. But what the Buccaneers have done, I think, is done what they could because of the limited cap space that they had. And also, you've written about it, Scott, and we've talked about it. You know, look. Teams that win free agency in March don't normally win the Super Bowl in February, and the Buccaneers have learned that the hard way.
They've tried this approach.
Sure.
It has not worked. It's failed miserably. I think 2014, when Jason Light took over, it went on a shopping spree with new head coach Lovie Smith. They spent an ungodly amount of money on Josh McCown,
Anthony Collins, Michael Johnson, Altaron Verner.
Yep.
It's crazy to think Josh McCown was like a big free agent signing.
Well, you know what? He was only a $5 million a year guy, but at that point, you know, they needed a
bridge. He had that big run with the Bears, right? That's what pretty much got him.
And
his next
he played for the Bears with Lovie, and he was the top quarterback in free agency that year. And so they went out and signed all these big-name players. The best free agent signing they had that year was the most unheralded, Clint McDonald. He's the only guy that saw the last penny of his contract. He played the entire 4 years and was the best. And that
you could argue second best was Brandon Myers that year, the tight end, who played a couple seasons, not a lot. That just goes to show you that, you know, you can spend all the money in the world and you can mortgage your future, but – and look, if this Buccaneer team was one safety away from winning the Super Bowl,
then maybe you find
a way to go do that.
Yeah. If for the longtime Buccaneer fan listeners out there that say, what about Simeon Rice and what about Brad Johnson? Yeah, those players were great. But even those additions did not get the Buccaneers over the hump. It was really in 2002 when you had players that were signed like Joe Jerovicius and Greg Spires and Roman Oben and Kerry Jenkins and Michael Pittman. These were mid-level signings that were the blue-collar, workman-like guys that were looking for the opportunity, that were hungry.
Filled a role, a need,
and didn't come
with exorbitant price tags.
Right, and what they did was they turned a lot of the areas, because back in the day, the Buccaneers, they had the Mike Allstotts, the Warren Sapps, the John Lynch, the Rondé Barber, the Derek Brooks. They had those A-list players, those Pro Bowl-caliber players. And, they added a couple more that ended up being hits. Brad Johnson was a B. Simeon Rice was an A. So they were able to find some players in free agency that were pretty damn good players. And I think that Jason Light traded for a guy like Jason Pierre-Paul that is more like an A-list type player. But what they were able to do with those dungy teams that couldn't get over the hump, that couldn't win in the first round in Philadelphia and beat the Eagles to get further in the playoffs or the Super Bowl, was they turned C-level positions into B-level positions. And then that combined with the A-level starters they had on that roster is what got the Bucs 12-4 into the Super Bowl and winning it. And I think that the Buccaneers right now, what's been holding them back is not just the fact that they've got a handful of A-list players like your Mike Evans and your Levante Davids and players like that. It's they got a lot of C players. They have a lot of C positions and maybe even some Ds and Fs that they have to upgrade. And so you turn an F into a C and a C into a B, and those wins are going to rack up and stack up.
Especially when they're coached better. I mean, yeah. And you know, I've had a lot of questions from me when doing different radio shows lately. You know, is coaching going to make that? Because it appears the Buccaneers are putting all of their eggs in the coaching basket. That was a question in the most recent Pewter Report, Bucks Monday mailbag. Mm-hmm. And yes and no. I mean, they do feel that this is going to be a better coach team. If they kept everybody they had last year with a new coaching staff, I think the general consensus inside the building upstairs anyway is they would have won three or four more games just based on that. But they've lost a few guys. But, again, you take a look at DeSean Jackson leaving and you say, man, well, there's four touchdowns and 761 yards receiving, whatever it was, you know, and Adam Humphries with his 816 yards, had he replaced that? Well, they do it with, number one, developing a guy like Chris Godwin, who will take on more of a role with this team, but also bringing in a guy like Perriman for $6 million less, and they think that he can put up those same numbers, if not better those numbers. And, you know, I think that's the way to do it. Like you say, yeah, DeSean Jackson on paper may be a B player, right? But in the way he played here in Tampa and the chemistry he had with Jameis Winston, he wasn't a B player. So they think they've upgraded that position a little bit.
Well, and that's the thing is if you don't have a winning core, you're not going to win. You can't take a team that isn't ready to win, go make two splash moves, and expect to go to a Super Bowl. I'm sorry to tell Bucs fans, but signing Le'Veon Bell wasn't going to take you to the Super Bowl next year, and neither was signing Tyrann Mathieu.
You know who's going to take this team to the Super Bowl? How well Jameis Winston plays. I mean, that's the key to this year. It really is for most teams. I mean, you look at the Rams turning things around when Jared Goff all of a sudden started playing well. Now, he got better coaching with Sean McVay than he had with Jeff Fisher, certainly.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's the hope for this team is Bruce Arians, Clyde Christensen, and Byron Leftwich turn Jameis Winston into that better football player because ultimately they can have all the role players they want, but if you don't have a guy under center that can lead your team and perform well, you're just not going to go very far in today's NFL.
Right. And you mentioned Breshad Perriman, and we've written about it. It's important for our Pewter Nation podcast listeners to understand the thought process, and we'll find out if it's going to make a difference, right? But the thought process in getting a Breshad Perriman is you're essentially trying to replace two receivers you lost, right? And DeSean Jackson and Adam Humphries. Humphries was the slot. D-Jax was the outside speed guy. And whether he was a deep threat target or a decoy that allowed guys like O.J. Howard and Cam Brate and Mike Evans to operate underneath, that was the role. And so Breshad Perriman is an outside speed guy, is either the deep threat decoy or the deep threat touchdown producer, depending on whether Jameis can hit him. But he's 6'2", about 215 pounds, and he's got a bigger catch radius. He's got the catch radius that Chris Godwin and Mike Evans have, as opposed to, and how many times did we see DeSean Jackson feebly attempt to go up and try to
DeSean
fight for
Jackson's
balls?
DeSean Jackson's catch radius was a small little garbage pail at your desk in your office.
Yes.
And Breshad Perriman's catch radius is the 55-gallon drum, right?
Right.
Or maybe even a dumpster.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the difference in the two. You're
like
right,
it's a kiddie
Scott.
Pool and like an Olympic-sized swimming pool, really, at the end of the day. And that's what Jameis needs because he's not pinpoint accurate on those deep passes.
I've told people this, and they you know, Jameis Winston put up all these yards in college. He didn't do it throwing 80-yard touchdown passes.
Right.
I mean, he had a couple
Calvin
of those.
Benjamin
exactly.
over the middle, stuff
AKA
like that.
Mike Evans, essentially, the same guy.
Nick O'Leary,
right.
You know, working against the nickel corner.
Yeah.
I love Nick O'Leary. Yeah. He's such a fun player.
He had an Adam Humphries-type receiver, too, you know, to work underneath and things like that.
Right.
That's where his bread and butter was.
You look at the top four receivers now, Mike Evans, 6'5", Chris Godwin, 6'1". He plays a little bit bigger than that.
Definitely.
And Breshad Perriman, 6'2", and Justin Watson, 6'3". So you got a bigger receiving core. It's a little bit closer to the Duncaneers' vision that they kind of envisioned back in the day.
And you're forgetting O.J. Howard.
Yeah, 6'6".
Cam
Brain.
Yes, James is 6'4" and a half.
Arguably favorite target.
Right.
Now that so Humphries is gone.
They're going to hire. I heard they're going to bring in Manute Bol.
His son, actually, who plays at Oregon.
Bol Bol.
Yeah, Bol Bol.
What a name, yeah. Right. He's buddies with Shaq's son, Sharif O'Neal.
So, you know, it's going to be a bigger receiving target, and you still have the speed with Perriman. We'll see if it works out. But the important thing is what are they going to do in the slot? And I don't think that this team was really ever that hot to trot to keep Adam Humphries. And the reason why is because, yes, he has the rapport with Jameis Winston. He's the bailout kind of guy on third downs, the chain mover. There was a role for that. But ideally, Chris Godwin, the bigger-bodied wide receiver, the better blocker, working inside in that Larry Fitzgerald role, that's really what Bruce Arians envisions, is having Godwin inside in the slot. It's a different type slot receiver than it was in Dirk Cutter's offense. And you're going to be asked to do more perimeter blocking at the edge, helping out the tight end, getting that second-level block, which is going to help the run game. Chris Godwin's a hell of a blocker. We've seen the downfield blocking, hell of a blocker. But more importantly, having a big enough body with speed to really create some mismatches. Are you going to match up Chris Godwin with the linebacker? Are you going to match him up with the smaller nickel corner? Are you going to match him up with the safety? That's how teams tried and failed to attack Larry Fitzgerald. And I think that's the role for Godwin. So Godwin inside, he can be used outside,
right. But
mostly inside in the slot, Mike on one side, Brashad on the other. And if you kept Adam Humphries, Humphries can't do those things in this slot receiver role the way Larry Fitzgerald could in Arizona or the way that Chris Godwin can in Tampa this year. And Humphries is not big enough to play outside. So at 5'10", 192, it would have been a really tough fit to get Adam Humphries and his one-dimensionalness in this offense, and at $9 million just wasn't worth it.
No, and I think we'd all agree that out of all of the four of us, I was as close to Adam as anybody. Loved
yes.
Adam.
Yeah, I'd agree with
my
that.
My favorite guest of
you were almost
of What's Cooking. We you know,
it was almost Cam Brate, Adam Humphries, Ryan Griffin, and Mark Cook. Almost.
And Alan Cross.
He was Lester, you know, was the fourth roommate.
Yeah.
Right. I will say they never invited me out to South Tampa on a Friday night. I can't say I was that close. But bottom line is I absolutely 1,000% agree that you let him walk. You can't pay the guy $9 million. $5 million, maybe $6 million, because he is a chemistry guy, and you need those kind of guys in your locker room. He's good for Jameis, but absolutely not. He's not the right fit at that price tag.
Fantastic signing by Tennessee, because they've got – listen, for as many questions as there are about Jameis Winston here in Tampa, let me tell you, there's as many questions about Marcus Mariota in Tennessee, because the guy has been oft injured, and he has not really been the driver of that team. It's really kind of been the defense in the running game with Derrick Henry and the defense there, more so than Marcus Mariota leading the Titans
right. To
the playoffs and winning games, et cetera. And with those injuries, they're really in a quandary about what they're going to do up there. That's why you saw them trade for Tannehill. That was an indictment, honestly, on Marcus Mariota, because they're doing the opposite here in Tampa
right. By
getting rid of Fitzpatrick. So to me, having that safety net receiver for Mariota up there, great signing by John Robinson, who was in Tampa with Adam Humphries in that 2015 draft class. Humphries came in as the undrafted free agent tryout player. And Robinson knows the value of what he meant to Jameis Winston and his development. And so in a really big year for Tennessee, that was a big get, I think, for the Titans, getting Adam Humphries to kind of play that slot receiver security blanket role for Mariota.
And we can finally get the answer to who's better, Jameis or Marcus Mariota. We'll finally have someone.
We'll ask Adam,
who's
right?
Been a receiver for both.
Yeah, we can text Adam. Yeah, so who's the better receiver? He's going to say, since I'm getting this Tennessee Titans paycheck, I'm going to have to go with
that was crazy, that story, too, that the Patriots swooped in last second and tried to sign him away.
Yeah.
And Adam really, really thought hard about that, you know. But, again, it was a difference in $6 million over the course of the 4 years. And
Did he consult you, Mark, at all, as the bro?
Look, I'm not gonna get into that. You know, our relationship, we're going to keep that private at this point. But we had some dialogue. And I'll just leave it at that. I knew it was going to be the Titans, and when people were thinking, oh, it might be the Patriots or somebody else.
You were like, I'd rather a vacation than see you for a weekend in Nashville and bunk at your place.
He's already offered to buy me a beer. He says, I got you, bro. Yes. That was the exact quote in the tweet. I got you, bro.
Yeah.
So anyway, so no, Adam's a good guy. But
he's a really good guy.
But at $9 million, that's just insanity.
Yeah.
But you know what? What a great story, man. I mean, people think, oh, he's just an undrafted guy. No, he wasn't just an undrafted guy.
He was a tryout guy.
He was a tryout guy. Yeah. See, I've had a couple people ask me, what's the difference between that and just an undrafted guy? Is they after the draft, the undrafted guys, they call and they, you know, bring in their guys. And then agents are like, hey, do me a favor. I've got this guy. Just, you know, let him come in on that first day of rookie minicamp, you know, just see what he can do.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people don't understand that the rookie minicamp, the post-draft rookie minicamp, it is draft picks, right? So the Buccaneers this year have seven guys. It's going to be seven players, maybe nine if they pull some trades off and get more players.
They will.
Then that's nine, all right? Then you're going to have like a handful of players that were first-year guys in the practice squad that are eligible. Okay, so maybe you've got around 12 to 16 players. Well, you need 53 players or at least 40 or so to have an offense and a defense, right? So they like to have 50 to 60 players at these three-day minicamps to play other positions. So half of the guys that are there, because you mentioned undrafted free agents, those are some of them, but you can only sign so many. More than half of the players that show up are undrafted free agents that are there for a tryout basis. They're basically just camp fodder just so they can help implement, you know, so if the Buccaneers draft a receiver, they have to have a quarterback to throw to him, right? So you have to get a couple quarterbacks there.
Yeah, they draft a cornerback, you got to have some receivers to go up against them, and that's essentially what Adam was. And listen, I'm a Florida State guy. I don't remember Adam at Clemson, to be honest with you. He just wasn't a star player up there.
Well, he's not a guy that jumps off the TV screen at you or off the field at you. You look at him, he's what? We said 5'10".
He should be jumping off the TV screen. He could go to Hollywood. He's a good looking man.
He's a phenomenal player, but it's really a testament, I think, to his work ethic and to taking advantage of situations when you're given them, because he's not a guy that's going to show up to camp and maybe he has a drop issue or maybe he has a technique issue, but he's standing 6'5" and can run a 4.
Scott and I saw every mini camp, OTA, training camp of Adam's 4 years here in Tampa, and the number of drops we saw, we could count on one hand.
Yeah.
Less than one
just
hand.
Just blue.
Yeah. I mean, he just didn't drop the ball.
We should call him Elmers.
Elmers Humphreys.
Yes.
But a good guy. Now, another guy the Buccaneers lost that some people were upset about was Quan Alexander.
I thought you were going to mention Alan Cross again.
We're going to.
This has been a hard offseason for
tough.
You, Cook.
I don't have any friends in that locker room anymore.
You got to make some new friends.
I refuse.
Jeez.
I'm just not going to. I'm just not going to go to open locker room this year. I'm just going to pout.
It's too sad.
It's going to be heartbreaking to look over and see Allen's empty. Well, it's not going to be empty. It's going to be occupied by somebody else. And, you know, naturally, I'm going to try not to, but I'm probably going to hate whoever occupies Adam. And,
you have, like,
and
some kind of hidden bias
against him. Yeah. Like, why'd you suck so bad yesterday? You know, I'll be in the open locker room.
It's like, dude,
sorry.
I'm the long snapper.
Adam wouldn't have dropped that pass. You know, no, I won't do that. I'll try not to. But anyway, Quan Alexander, $13.5 million a year on average to the 49ers. You know what I say? Again, love Quan.
Go get your paper.
Great story.
Yeah.
Enjoy your time in the other Bay Area, because
it wasn't a good business decision for the Buccaneers to re-sign him. It just wasn't, because you look at Quan Alexander, and I love the guy personally. I mean, he was great at the Peter Report. I appreciate every likable thing about him, the energy, the ferociousness he brought, the splash plays, all that stuff.
Guy who loved to play football, loved to practice football. You know, you need those guys.
Fourth round
on your
pick,
team.
Underdog story. You know, I mean, people forget. Bruce Carter was signed as the big free agent guy that year. He was the $5 million a year starting middle linebacker.
Came over from the Cowboys. Yeah. He was the splash guy of that free agent class.
And Quan beat him out in training camp.
Well, Scott and I remember, I don't remember who it was, but somebody upstairs texted you, Scott, and goes, before training camp, it said, this guy's going to be the starter.
Yeah.
And we kind of laughed. We're like, yeah, right. You signed Bruce Carter. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
He was. Yeah. And Bruce Carter moved to the Sam, and then a year later, you know, he was traded away. So, you know, great guy, but again, you got to look at the value. He's a good linebacker.
Yes.
He's a good linebacker.
But he got paid great money.
He got paid elite money. Not even great money. He got paid elite money. And
if you look at he's played for 4 years. He's only been a 16-game starter one of those years.
Yep.
Right? The first year was the 4-game PED suspension. And then in the second year, he played all 16 games. Really had a Pro Bowl caliber season that year. Didn't get rewarded for it until the next year. But he missed, I want to say,
three or four games that year, hamstring.
And then last year with the ACL, and he's not going to be ready by the time the season starts.
And think about it. You're implementing a brand new defense.
Right.
Right? A whole new scheme.
Whether it's in Tampa or San Francisco, doesn't matter.
But if he were to stay here, he wouldn't be on the field to even be able to really understand the concepts of this defense until really maybe the preseason at the earliest. I mean, I don't even know that he's going to be ready for the start of camp. He could start the season on the PUP list.
I think he starts the season on PUP in San Francisco, which means that would be out of 5 years, he would not be a 16-game starter for four of those, right? And like you mentioned, it's catching up on all of the install time.
Did you say catching?
Catching up.
Catching?
Catching.
As in fishing?
As in fishing.
As in catching fish?
As in catching fish in a boat.
In a boat.
In a boat.
Or by land. It doesn't matter because, look, if you are a fisherman, there's one place you have to go to get all of your equipment, from a bank fisherman to a guy who goes 300 miles offshore and fishes 100 feet to the bottom for big massive grouper or sailfish or whales. If you're fishing for great whales, T.A. Mahoney's is your one-stop shop. They've got everything you need. Now, don't go fishing for blue whales because I have a feeling that that's illegal. They're an endangered species.
I
don't know that they sell harpoons, but they could probably order you a harpoon if you need a harpoon.
Or a flare gun.
They definitely have flare guns. I actually was at T.A. Mahoney's on Wednesday, spent an hour or so with Mike Mahoney. He's the owner, along with his family. Mark was there. Matt was there. Great family. I tell you what, every time I go in there, I stop in there for just a couple minutes, end up spending an hour. It's that kind of place, right? You don't go to the big box store and spend an hour chatting with a guy about fishing and hunting and things like that. You go into Mike's store, and you're going to spend some time there. So if you're in a hurry, don't stop by. But if you got time, very personable people. And the thing about them is they all are outdoorsmen themselves. They don't hire guys just as, $10 an hour clerks. These are guys that go out, they hunt, they fish, they do all of those things, and they can take care of all of your needs, from boating repairs to trailer repairs. And look, it's on right now. If you haven't got your boat done, you're behind the eight ball right now, but they can still get you in. If you need to get your boat seaworthy, get some repairs done, do some add-ons, T.A. Mahoney's is your one-stop shop. Since 1948, Scott, the year you were born, 1948, no, 70 years ago, they've been in business for 72 years. Scott's age, he just said 72. T.A. Mahoney's, 50th Street in Atomo. Great guys, great family. Go check them out. T.A. Mahoney's, you can find them online also, tamahoney.com.
That was an uncanny segue. I was literally in mid analytical sentence, and you just snatched the T.A. Mahoney.
I'm going to be honest with
right
you.
There.
Mike said he likes when I do that. He says, I listen to it, man. He says, I really like how you
guys
do that.
I was in mid sentence. I said, catching on or catching up, and then you just grabbed it. That was really good.
Well, I'm pretty good at that.
To finish on Quan Alexander, I just don't think that the value is there. And I think what they're going to do now is, I wouldn't be shocked if you see Kevin Minter be the base inside linebacker alongside Levante David. They have Mike and Mo. Those are the inside linebackers. I think you're going to see Levante David play Mo.
And then who plays Larry and Curly?
Very funny, Mr. Three Stooges. No, the others are Will and Sam. So we went over this before, but for the newcomers, Carl Nassib, Shaq Barrett will be your Sam linebackers in the 3-4 defense. When they play nickel, you're going to see a four-man line. You're going to see probably a 4-3 look, or actually a 4-2 look at that time, because it would be nickel. But you're going to be looking at Carl Nassib and Shaq Barrett, two different body types, two different players playing that Sam linebacker position, setting the edge, rushing the edge on that. And then inside, probably Kevin Minter, a very experienced player, knows the Todd Bowles defense well from his days in Arizona at the mic, and then having Levante David as your three-down linebacker playing Mo. And then weak side linebacker, as it stands right now, Jason Pierre-Paul and Noah Spence will be rotating there. And then on the inside, you're going to have Will Golston as your five technique, strong side defensive end, occupying that right tackle, tight end double team. You're going to have Vita Vea at nose with Bo Allen backing him up. Gerald McCoy is your current three technique right now. And so that's your 3-4 defense and how it's going to be set up. Where does Deion Buchanan come into play? Well, they're going to be playing nickel 70% of the time. So you're going to be seeing a lot more Buchanan than you are Minter in this scheme. And Levante David is still going to be playing. He'll be moving over to that Mike linebacker role in nickel. And then you're going to be having Buchanan as the money backer, that quasi strong safety linebacker type guy. And then you might see Shaq Barrett take some snaps in there as a blitzer instead of Buchanan. So Todd Bowles is going to get super creative with this with these front seven players. And you might see some things that don't even look like 3-4 or 4-3. Some really crazy uses of personnel. You might only see one defensive lineman out there with four linebackers and three safeties. I mean, it can get kind of crazy and exciting. It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun
to cover
it?
This team.
It's going to be really fun. I mean, look at what we were talking about from the defensive, from a coaching standpoint last year.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting here in this room with months to go before the season. We're going, man.
Yeah.
I mean,
no imagination to wide open.
Yeah, we're not saying this is going to turn into the number one defense in the league, but at least we're sitting here talking about fun, yeah. Innovative, creative.
Well, creative, thoughts. I think that's the key word there. It's going to be creative. And, you know, Todd Bowles, despite his lack of success as a head coach up with the New York Jets, the guy's a proven defensive leader.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's a very, very smart guy, and I think he's going to be able to relate to these guys as well. You know, he's kind of a no-nonsense guy. Bruce Arians is more of a shuck and jive, you know, kind of guy. Todd's more of a stern guy personality.
You gotta have the good cop, bad cop routine. So
yeah.
Let Bruce get all the praise, but he's gonna be behind the scenes, wheeling and dealing, making his moves.
It's
kind of
like
plans.
Me and Scott. I don't know who's the good cop or the bad cop.
It really depends on the day.
That's true. We're versatile. Yes. Some days I can be. He's usually the bad cop because he's usually yelling at me for something.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Well, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention that the Buccaneers hired two female coaches on the staff.
Okay, next.
Oh, come on
just
now.
Just kidding.
Come on. That's a
just
big deal.
That's for our four... That's a joke for our four female listeners.
We have more than that.
Five.
My mom's one of them, so...
Well, all right, yeah. So maybe we have five, but...
No, I mean, I love Bruce Arians' philosophy about ideas can come from anywhere. Right,
sure.
They can, and in different perspectives, Lori Locust certainly has a ton of defensive line coaching experience at the semi-pro level, whatever. And I was talking with Brenson Buckner, and you know I've thrown out there that I used to coach my son in Pop Warner football. I was a defensive line coach, defensive coordinator, and that's how he got his start. And granted, he's a former NFL player, but before Brenson Buckner became an NFL defensive line coach in Arizona, then Tampa, now in Oakland.
He was a female?
No, he was. I'm getting to that.
Oh, okay.
No,
sorry.
Brenson Buckner, not a female.
Following along.
And would kick the nuts off you right now if he heard you say that.
He's in Oakland. He can't hear anything.
He still reads PeterReport.com.
That's
true.
Have
you not seen our direct messages?
He's a big fan.
Yeah, he's a big fan. So, hello, Coach Buck. I'll send you Mark's private address, and you can.
Went in the witness protection.
Maybe
program.
You can meet him in Lot 6. You and Buckner. Maybe
no.
We should sell tickets.
No, I'll meet most of our readers in Lot 6, but I'm not meeting Coach Buckner. No, thank
Anyways,
you.
Anyways, Buckner coached Pop Warner football. That's where he got to start into coaching, and it's all the friggin' same. It's whether it's the Pop Warner level, high school, college, pro. The fundamentals are the fundamentals. They don't change. That's what's so great about the game. Is and I'll tell you what, you think you know football when you have to try to teach it to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids and try to actually apply it, that's a huge difference. So for me, whether it's a male or female, if she's coached for 15 years and she's got experience enough to where she can make it to the AAF, the Birmingham Iron, and then she did an internship last summer with the Baltimore Ravens, mm-hmm. with Joe Cullen, former Bucks defensive line coach, who's the D-line coach out there. He gave her rave reviews and a thumbs up.
Raven reviews.
Raven. I like that. Raven
like
reviews.
That.
Raven reviews.
Every once in a while, I'll pull a rabbit out of my hat. Go ahead.
You did. You're on a roll today with these segues
yeah, like
and all that. I like it.
Yeah,
so it's going to be great, I think, for the defensive line to get a different perspective. And I think it's a great trailblazing opportunity for the Buccaneers to do this. Again, the Buccaneers, the only NFL franchise that have hired three African-American head coaches. And I believe the only NFL franchise that have drafted three African-American quarterbacks in the first round. And yet, this is the Blazers and the Buccaneers. Yet again, your Tampa Bay Buccaneers blazing new trails and hiring two full-time female coaches. One will be in the strength conditioning, and then one will really be in the football side with Lori Locust in the defensive line room.
Yeah, that's when that story broke last night, and you got the story up. It's up on PeterReport.com right now. I thought to myself, okay, how qualified are these people? And you go back and you look at their track record, and they are qualified. They're very qualified, and you can't look at it as just a gender-specific thing.
Sure. And she's even played defensive end in a women's semi-pro league, too. So she's got some experience.
And again, you said you can learn from anybody. And just sometimes a different perspective from a different personality and a different gender. Maybe that does make a difference. We'll see. But I applaud the Buccaneers for making that move because, the NFL has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And for them to do something like this. And again, you mentioned this, Scott. Franchise has been a trailblazer on a number of fronts over the years, including the drafting of Doug Williams in the late 70s to be a starting quarterback out of Grambling. Mm-hmm. And very, very unpopular, particularly down here in the South.
Sure.
It's much different in 2019 than it was back then.
It wasn't like he was a quarterback
then.
At Alabama,
exactly.
Crimson Tide.
Right.
I mean, he was a quarterback at Grambling.
And John McKay went in the stands after a fan who called Doug the N-word.
That's good for him.
John didn't take any crap. Yeah. Say what you want about Hugh Culverhouse. Being whatever you want to call him.
Right.
But again, he signed off on these things, and then the Glazers picked that right back up with the hiring of Tony Dungy as their first coaching hire.
Tony Dungy, Ricky
Lovie
Morris,
Smith.
Lovie Smith, yep. And drafted Josh Freeman, then drafted Jameis Winston. So, again, your franchise, I think, is making a lot of people proud by blazing some trails. The one thing that I'll say, too, is it applies to, and you mentioned it, a woman's perspective, woman's point of view. Mm-hmm. And how does that apply into the game of football? Well, Jason Light will be the first to tell you. When you miss on a free agent like Anthony Collins, when you miss on a draft pick, you're not missing on the player because you've seen what they can do on tape. You're missing on the person, right? And it's like we're all human beings. Everybody at one Buccaneer place, all these players, some of these guys are having to move from the West Coast to the East Coast, and that's a huge adjustment in their life, right? If they have to leave behind a girlfriend or whatever. I mean, these guys only play football X amount of hours a week. They are people, too. And, like I tell people all the time, the only difference between us and you out there listening in Peter Nation podcast land and the players themselves are they are more athletic, they're on TV, and they probably make more money than you. That's the only difference. Other than that, these guys go through divorces. They go through bankruptcies. They have health issues. They have health issues to their families. They lose loved ones.
Kids get sick.
Yes.
I mean, it is a normal life other than
right.
they're just blessed athletically.
And so if she can bring a different perspective, mm-hmm. a different insight into not just maybe the defensive line, but maybe she can connect with Jameis Winston in a way or the kicker in a way and pick up a little personality trait or insight that can help, I think the Buccaneers are better because of it.
Yep, absolutely. And again, I trust Bruce Arians in that situation. He was the one, I believe, who was the first person to bring aboard.
Jen Welter. Yeah.
Dr.
2015.
Jen Welter, by
Correct.
The way. Don't forget that. She'll remind you of that. But anyway, all right, so free agency is – first wave is over, so now there's still some holes to fill in this football team. And the draft is upcoming.
I still think they're going to sign a veteran cornerback.
Corner.
I think they're looking for.
There's not a lot. I mean, okay, Matt, you did a story yesterday on some of the best ones left. Who's the guy, if you're Jason Light, if you can get him for $3 million a year, who are you signing?
So I would personally go with Morris Claiborne, just because he just played with Todd Bowles for the past 2 years with the Jets. He's come relatively cheap. The big bugaboo on him used to be that he couldn't stay healthy, but the past 2 years, he's played 15 games in each season. He had 17 pass deflections this year, 2 interceptions. His 17 passes defended were, in the top 5 of the league.
And probably as many as the Buccaneers had combined as a secondary last year.
Yeah, pretty much. And he'll be able to come in and, fight for one of the top spots as a cornerback, which I think he would certainly be down with, and You know, he played with young players in the secondary with the Jets, like Jamal Adams at safety and mm-hmm. Marcus May at safety as well. So he could help guide along all this, all these young corners yeah. and safeties with Todd Bowles, knowing him very well.
He's a guy that a lot of Buccaneers fans wanted the Buccaneers to draft 2012, was it?
Something like that.
Was it
yeah.
the Levante? Did him and Levante come in the same year? I believe it was that draft.
Yeah, he was at LSU and went to the Dallas Cowboys.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, and so you know, maybe they end up getting this guy.
The biggest knock on him at the time was tackling. He was not a good tackler, not very physical. He was decent in coverage and all of that. But I think the biggest concern of mine, and yeah, the coaching better fix this in a hurry, is just the lack of playmakers that the secondary has right now. I think it's they have a combined 7 career interceptions between all of them.
But Scott, and it's Justin hard to make Evans an interception when you're being taught to play 10 yards off the receiver.
Agreed. And they decided not to re-sign or tender Andrew Adams,
yep.
who led the team in
interceptions. But you know what?
So
he had 3 in a game with
right.
a Cam
true.
With a bad with a wounded wing, man. Right. Yeah. You know, I like Adams a lot, but you know, people say, man, he had 4 interceptions. He led the team. Well, 3 yeah. came in a game where Cam Newton was just awful.
Remember
that day.
Wayne Haddix?
Yeah.
He led the team.
He made the Pro Bowl 1 year.
Yeah, 1 year.
One year.
He was literally a 1 year
out of the
wonder.
League 2 years later.
Right. Didn't he have, like, 9 interceptions 1 year? Or
I
like
don't
that?
Know, but he had, like, 2 or 3 pick sixes that year.
Yeah.
Had a 2 or 3 game. He had a couple multi-interception games.
Right. It was almost like Stiles G. White, where he had – he had like 8 or 9 sacks in a season and 5 forced fumbles, but like he's just like a flash in the pan kind of guy. So, let's talk a little bit now about. We all agree, right, that they're probably going to sign a veteran cornerback. You would suspect
they need to.
Okay, and
should be top priority in terms of free agents.
I would say keep an eye on Matt Bryant, and keep an eye on Mike Glennon. I think that they're still looking for an upgrade over Ryan Griffin, some real competition for the backup job. And Jason Light has an affinity for Mike Glennon. Wanted to pay him a boatload of money to stay, but obviously the siren song of being a starter in Chicago was too great to keep Mike Glennon in Tampa. But Jason was going to write a pretty hefty check to keep him here as the league's highest paid backup, because he believes in having a big-time backup quarterback, mm-hmm. or at least someone that can come in. And you look at 6'6", he's a big, tall pocket passer, fits the Bruce Arians mold. He was in Arizona last year with Byron Leftwich.
Very mobile. Very, very mobile.
More statuesque and with like cement feet.
They call him the baby giraffe, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but I that's a name to keep an eye. If the price is right,
yeah,
I wouldn't be shocked if Lennon returns to Tampa. I think what he wants to see is if he signs with Miami, because that's the obvious destination, right? If he signs with Miami, are they going to draft a quarterback in the first round? Probably. Then he's there as the 3, right? Because they already have Fitzpatrick, and then you've got the first-round draft pick quarterback. So I think Mike Glennon, I think he's going to wait and survey the scene. It might not happen until after the draft, but I wouldn't be shocked if he returns to Tampa. I think that they want some veteran competition for Cairo Santos. And the longer Matt Bryant stays out there, I think that might be a training camp battle you'll see as a veteran come in to challenge Cairo Santos for the kicking job.
Yeah, and I think Matt Bryant would be a good guy to come in here. Matt and Cairo both aren't terrific on kickoffs, so yep. The Buccaneers have upgraded, I think, the punter position with Pinion.
Yeah.
And, a younger Brian Anger, I guess, a little bit better stats, and a little cheaper. He's going to make about $400,000 less. Not a huge cap savings,
right.
But he'll make a little bit less than Brian Anger. And we really saw Brian's numbers kind of decrease over the last couple years. Mm-hmm. He had a really good first year with the Buccaneers. Second year was better, and then he's kind of went down the last couple years. I think he's been here 4 years.
You know what also goes down really well? A beer at Ford's Garage.
Mm.
A beer and a burger. I wash it right down with a nice local Tampa craft
Don't
beer.
Forget those nachos, too.
That I actually had a plate. I tried the nacho challenge myself.
We saw how that played out.
I got about
Twitter.
A third of the way through, and I was like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
No, I still can't believe somebody actually finished off a complete plate of the nachos in one sitting, but they did. But
did
I
they
attempted
win for
to
that?
Do that. They won a Bear Root autographed Pewter Report framed cover
Oh, that's
photo.
Right, yeah. That's a hell of a prize.
It's funny. That person has not gotten to me with their address yet. If not, nope.
Wow, we might have to throw it back out there in the hopper. Yeah,
for,
you know?
We've been trying to give away that Barrett Rood thing for about 7 years.
Have we actually contacted Barrett Rood? Would you say?
That's just rude.
It is rude. It is You're right, rude. Taylor.
But, yeah, no, they won that. But Ford's Garage, you know, multiple locations. And they're going to be opening up some other locations in Central Florida as well. Not sure if we're allowed to say yet, but I heard word of a couple areas over towards Moore in the central part of the state, which will be good for you people that are between Polk County and Orlando, if that kind of gives you a hint where our new location is opening. I was at the Brandon location this past week, had a great meal, decided to go with my salmon, almost went with something else, but went with my salmon again. Just can't beat the blackened salmon. Love it very much. They do a chili garlic as well if you like a little spice on your fish as well. But burgers are great, nachos are great, and there's just more alcohol than you can know what to do with. And you know what I did? I did exactly what we've been telling readers to do. Went and watched the Lightning play that night.
Yes.
And it's just
air right now.
Also watched Florida State lose to Duke. So it was Saturday night that I was there. So, yeah. But luckily the Lightning was on and was able to see both of those.
You know, I got Barrett Rood's number. I just went through my phone. I still got a cell number. I should
dial it right now and see if he answers. Seriously, ooh, do it.
Huh? We need
put
it
on speakerphone.
Okay. All right.
Put it on speakerphone and see if
this
he answers.
This is the segment we've all been waiting
linebacker
for.
Linebacker coach extraordinaire of the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
If maybe he wants the autographed Barrett Rood cover of himself. You know, I'm dialing Barrett to see. Maybe it's the same number. Maybe he's got it changed. But if he doesn't want, if the winner doesn't want the autographed Rood right. Report cover, we could give it to Barrett.
Right.
I don't know how cheesy it would look to have something he autographed himself on his own wall, but maybe a family member.
Well, I have a hunch.
So, okay. That's true, yeah.
I'm guessing that he didn't finish the plate of nachos. I think he attempted it. He might have had some help. He might have dumped them in the trash.
No, what he did
and now
is
this is his conscience catching up with him. They he said, took, I can't
they,
take that
they took the
photo.
Nachos away from him, and he chased the server back to the kitchen about 7 yards behind
the table.
So there's
a story to this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, he was known for making a lot of tackles, but 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage. So
Barrett Rood, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought we were talking about the actual winner.
No, that guy, I don't know what happened to him. Again, he could have, like you said, dumped him on the floor because I don't know how in the hell you can eat all of those.
We have to have people start live streaming it.
I had the pulled pork ones, but they also do a chicken one. So if you don't like pork, you can do the chicken as well. Ford's Garage, multiple locations located throughout Central Florida. Proud sponsor of the Pewter Nation podcast. Make sure that you, if you go by, you take a photo, you tag Ford's Garage, you tag Pewter Report in there. And if you also can finish a plate of nachos in one sitting and send us a before and after picture. We've got some other prizes we can send you as well. Scott, don't you still have your old Explorer in the garage? We could send that to him.
My daughter's driving that.
You got that thing fixed?
Yeah.
It runs?
2003, baby.
Holy cow, man. You don't have the old, what was that car you had when I first met you in 1995?
The Saturn.
No.
You don't
still have the Saturn? No. That would be a collector's item.
Saturn SL.
You probably burned that engine up. I think
the engine did burn up.
I don't know if anybody's ever ridden with Scott that's listening right now, but
I get you where you want to be on time or fast.
And the heat, road rage, yes. There is a thing. I learned what road rage was in 1995.
I've taught you some, from the old some new Chris words.
Yeah. And some maneuverability. I mean, he could have been a stunt driver on the Dukes of Hazzard the way this guy is. Like, road closed. I don't buy that. Just drive right through the barricade. That's he didn't care. But we did make it to the stadium on time. I don't know why we're bringing that up right now. We're just trying to fill time to the end of this podcast. Oh, darn. We're out of time. We haven't even talked draft yet.
No, you know what the Buccaneers, speaking of draft, this is what they're trying to fill. They're trying to get some compensatory draft picks.
Yes.
Now, you've probably seen some articles out there that say, the Buccaneers have screwed themselves and they've got too many signings and they're not. Now, listen. The Buccaneers still feel pretty confident that they're going to end up with some compensatory draft picks in 2020. Mm-hmm. So hang tight. You know, they'll announce that stuff next March. And, you know, just hold your horses. I think that at the end of the day, they're going to position themselves where they can get some extra compensatory.
Isn't that the
picks.
Advantage of some of these one-year? I mean, look, yes. the Buccaneers are signing some one-year deals, not for compensatory draft picks as much as, you know, how do these guys fit and based on their salary cap situation. But it gives them a couple options. Number one, if a player like a Perriman who's on a one-year deal comes out and has a great year, or Barnett comes out and has a great year, you know, midway through the season or towards the end of the season, Barrett, I don't know why I keep calling him Barnett, but Barrett, then they can, you know, then they could re-up them early before they get into free agency, before the money goes crazy. But if they do lose them, as you said, Scott, there's an opportunity possibly that they get get a pick for that.
It's a perpetual issue, right? Because we're talking about these signings this year replacing some mega signings of you know, Fitzpatrick and Humphreys and Quan Alexander. So these smaller deals are going to help get picks in 2020, right? Well, then after these players play or don't play or whatever, that's going to factor into the mysterious, you know, cloaked in secrecy formula that the NFL uses for compensatory picks. And so, like you mentioned, let's say Buchanan or Barrett or both, they have tremendous years. Or let's say Barrett has a tremendous year and a guy like Carl Nassib has an okay year, and they opt to re-sign Barrett and let Carl Nassib go. And Nassib shows enough to where he gets a big-time deal elsewhere, right? So so then you get a compensatory pick for Nassib. But let's say Buchanan signs elsewhere, then you get a compensatory pick for him. So now it's not just the 2020 compensatory picks that you're getting. When these players leave next year and go somewhere else, you're setting yourself up for 2021 compensatory draft picks. And that's how teams like the Patriots and the Ravens, and up until recently the Steelers, but the Steelers have gotten away from this practice, but that's how these teams have been able to stockpile draft picks. And then when you have a bunch of draft picks, when you enter the draft with 10, you have so much more flexibility and maneuverability to go up or down and get players that you want. And so this is the strategy I think you're going to see Jason Light employ going forward, because spending $13.5 million on a Quan Alexander, spending $9 million on a slot receiver, just is not good business sense. And this team has tried the free agent process over and over again without great results.
Except for Carl Nix.
That was a bad move.
Eric Wright, though.
That was awful. Derek Ward was really bad, too. We can keep going on and on and on.
About Alvin Harper, though.
Chris Baker, no.
No?
No, no. So, Bert Emanuel, same thing. There's been a lot more misses than there have been hits. And the hits have been the guys like Jarrevicius and Greg Spires. Yeah. The real modest signings, the Clint McDonalds.
Michael Pittmans.
The guys that you can turn a position from a C to a B, those are the value signings. They come cheaper. They usually don't have money affect them. A lot of times they're coming on one-year deals, and they're trying to up their ante by giving you all they got for that contract year. Guys like Buchanan and Barrett this year and Perryman. So I like the strategy. It's different because what they've been trying to do hasn't worked. And if they can get in a position where and if you look at the draft and you sit there and say it's a 50-50 proposition, not just on the player that you're picking, but the draft class as a whole. If you have six draft picks and the number is 50%, only three of those guys in your draft class are actually going to be players. They're either going to stick on as a backup or a starter. The other three are going to be cast down the road in a year or two, right? So if you can hit 50% of your draft picks, but you have 10 picks as opposed to six, now you've added five more players, or I should say two more in this instance, so you have five players from this draft class. And the beauty of it is, economically speaking, is you got four of those guys on four-year deals, and you have one of those guys, your first-round pick, on a potential five-year deal at a really, really, really cheap salary. So you look at a player like Trey Flowers, who is a pretty good player. He's not a perennial Pro Bowl caliber player, but for the Patriots, he goes to the Lions, $28 million signing bonus, five-year, $90 million deal, $40 million fully guaranteed at signing for Trey friggin' Flowers. And I'm telling you right now,
they should have signed Mike Trout.
I like where you're going with that.
You like that?
Yeah.
$480 million.
Yeah, right?
Jesus Louise. If I'm O.J. Howard, I'm definitely playing baseball, too. I'm going to be taking batting practice for the Rays all the day long.
Listen, whether it's Cleveland Farrell, whether it's Montez Sweat, whether it's Josh Allen, whether it's Brian Burns, whether it's Ja'Kai Polite, there's going to be a defensive end or two in this draft class that are going to come in as a rookie or second-year player next year and be better than Trey Flowers is right now.
Yep.
And they're going to be making, if it's a first-round pick, $2, $3, $4 million a year. They're not going to be making $14, $15 million a year.
Look at you going Brian Burns there, bringing up Florida State. So
there's a chance.
Listen to me.
There's a chance, Mark.
And for all you people who say I'm, you know, a Florida State homer, I love Florida State, but I don't think Brian Burns is the right guy, particularly at number five, right?
Correct. And did you trade down?
Maybe, but again, he's light. He doesn't have a whole lot of ass, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. That's a big thing, is can you convert speed to power?
Right.
That's
right.
A big thing. And that's a reason why I think a similar player coming out of Georgia, Leonard Floyd, a couple of years ago, who when the Bucks traded down from Chicago to draft Vernon Hargraves.
Same thing with the Clemson defensive end that Atlanta drafted a few years ago. It had a 16-sack season a couple years ago, but really has kind of fallen off. Who's the guy?
Vic?
Yeah, Beasley.
Beasley, yeah. Beasley.
You know, similar to a Brian Burns. And look, if Brian Burns ends up here and he does well, that's great. But again, I'm not pounding the table for him just because he's a Florida State guy.
Yes.
So that's just a shot at all the people who say I'm just, you know, who am I going to pound for this year? I thought Dalvin Cook would have been a great pick for the Buccaneers. I thought Derwin James would have been a great pick for the Buccaneers. And I thought Jameis Winston was a great pick for the Buccaneers as well. They just happened to play at Florida State.
Sure. Yeah, I like
But remember, let's never forget the one person who picked the Buccaneers to draft Vernon Hargraves, a Gator. That would be me.
Yes, and you also pounded the table against the drafting of Roberto Aguayo.
My head hit the desk when they announced that pick, and Scott's like, you got to be excited. I was like, no. So anyway, I'm not just a Florida State homer.
We have Dalton Risner in our mock draft in the second round for the Buccaneers.
K-State.
And he might not make it to the second
K-State.
Round. K-State. I love Dalton Risner as a person. I think he's fantastic, and he's a great leader. He's everything you want. I think that there's some stuff lacking on tape a little bit. If he came here, I wouldn't be opposed to it in the second round. Mm-hmm. I think that's about where I think he is. I don't think he's first-round talent. But I'm not pounding the table for him. If you want a guard, I think Chris Lindstrom from Boston College in the second round is better. If you're looking for a guy that has the versatility to play guard and tackle and you want to – you know, you want to take a swing at your offensive line on the right side, and it's like, well, we're going to hit with Risner because he can play. He'll end up being a really good guard or a really good tackle, and you want to take that shot. I'm not opposed to it, but I'm not standing on the table for Dalton Risner.
Yeah. And just because he went to K-State. Taylor's not mentioning anybody from USF, which is good because I don't think they have any guys that are going to be drafted this year.
Should we talk to our defensive end, Jason Pierre-Paul? Here in Tampa?
Okay, but he's already been drafted.
Yeah,
he's
okay,
already
been Quentin drafted.
Flowers, you can't pound the
Mack.
Table for you can't pound the like table Marlon for Mack. Guys already in the league. I'm talking about guys that
that's true, yeah.
Who's going to be drafted?
Okay, Marquez Valdez-Scantling was last year with the Packers.
Who's going to be drafted this year?
Mr. Bull?
Come on.
This year it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
This
what about you,
tough.
Mr. University of Tampa? How many of your guys are going to make the draft this year?
Come on, Sparty.
Come on.
You didn't even go to Florida State.
That is not true.
Sitting on your high horse.
Wait. That is absolutely 1,000% not true. I went to Florida State multiple weekends for football games.
Yes.
Sleeping on the floor of my buddies.
So did I.
They stepped over me to go to class on Monday, and I'd be like, all right, man, I'm going to grab something out of the fridge and hit the road, and I'll see you next weekend.
You've also been to Florida State Pro Days.
Yeah, I've attended Florida State more than a lot of guys that went to school there, you know? I just
all right,
never
in
actually
case,
enrolled.
I play for the Lightning because I've been Hamlet.
Never said I played for Florida State. I'm just saying. Look, here's the reason, and we're running out of time, and no one's listening at this point anyway, so I'll tell a boring story. Here's the reason I'm a Florida State fan. My dad went to USF. All right, Taylor, are you happy? In the 70s, my dad would go to work all day, use his GI Bill that he got from NOM, and he would ride his motorcycle from Pinecrest, Florida to USF three nights a week to get his accounting degree. And much respect to my dad because, you know, he had a full-time job. He worked his ass off, had three kids, but he went to school. But when I started
playing...
Was your
dad Evel Knievel?
Huh?
Was your dad Evel Knievel?
He was cooler than Evel Knievel, okay. I'll say that. He didn't jump anything, but he had a Honda 750 chopper.
All right.
So it was like an easy rider. He looked like Peter Fonda or Dennis Hopper cruising with his handlebar mustache. But anyway... So I started playing football, youth league football, in 1978 for the Pinecrest Pilots. And, you know, I started watching football. I just started watching the Buccaneers in 77, and I'd been around. That was their second year. And we were one Saturday watching college football, and Florida State was on. And I was like, and, you know, he was cheering for Florida State. And I said, Dad, why do you like Florida State? And he says, well, you know, USF, my school doesn't have a football team. Growing up, everybody loved the Gators. My dad's a bit of a contrarian, you know, but, you know, that was the team in his area. And so, but at the time, Charlie Pell was the head coach at the University of Florida. Okay. Even before they almost got put on the death penalty, he was known as a shyster and a bit of a wheeler and a dealer. And
a charlatan.
There you go. Bobby Bowden had just gotten to Florida State a couple years before that. The man was an ordained Baptist minister. Well, the Cooks come from a long line of Baptists. So my dad said, we're going to cheer for a Baptist instead of a crook. So that's
Hell
how
yeah.
we became Florida State fans.
Heck yeah, right?
Heck yeah, dadgummit. So that's exactly why I'm a Florida State fan. So I grew up watching Florida State because I didn't have an allegiance at 7 or 8. I didn't have a college because I didn't go. I barely went to elementary school at that point. So
barely made it through elementary school from what I heard.
I was pretty good elementary. It was junior high that I struggled, but pimples kind of throw things off. But the bottom line is that's why I'm a Florida State fan today. No, I never attended. I am a proud HCC Hawk. So anybody want to bring it on about some JUCO basketball?
So
I got
the
you
Hawks
covered.
Throwing into the NFL draft this year?
I don't have anybody this year, but they got a pretty good baseball team from what I understand, Taylor. You're a baseball guy.
Is that true?
HCC?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had some friends, and actually one of the coaches I had at back when I was at King, went to HCC.
Okay.
They have a pretty decent JUCO program.
That's
University
right.
of Tampa has one heck of a team. I know that.
Oh, yeah. Our baseball team's awesome. Tino Martinez went there, Lou Piniella. And also, fun fact, the University of Tampa did used to have a college football team.
We know.
And they had a number one overall pick.
Yes, they did.
I don't know if USF has. I don't
John
know if
Matuszak.
Kansas State has. Yep.
Yes.
And he went on to play that guy in the Goonies with the messed up face.
Didn't he get a brain tumor and die, or was that Lyle Alzado?
He did pass away. So
he passed away young,
RIP
too.
RIP in peace.
Yeah, rip. All right. Well, speaking of rip,
we're going to bring this full circle. Kansas State has had a player drafted in each of the last 25 drafts. It's only a handful of colleges can make that claim.
Florida State.
Any of them first overall?
Not first overall.
Yeah.
Several first rounders.
Hate to see
overall.
That.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's going to continue this year. So the streak will go to 26 years, and that's one of the longest streaks in the entire nation for any school.
Florida State used to have the longest bowl streak in the nation. That kind of ended this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to bring that up. They're going to turn things around. Willie's got that bus back on track, boys. I don't know. Maybe. It's either going
nice
to be on track
him.
Or on
be
fire.
Be nice to him. Yeah. Be nice to him.
Well, he'll be back at USF in a couple years.
Mazzy
anyway.
Wilkins and Tyree McCants. They're going to be drafted. They were brought in by Willie. He can come back and coach at USF. I promise they'll welcome him back with open arms. Stay for. I mean, if he would have stayed 3 or 4 more years with what he did in that short time, that man would have had a freaking statue on campus. I don't blame him for Oregon and Florida State and going. You got to move up. We understand where we're at at USF, but.
All right, it's March Madness. Who's Florida State having the tourney?
I think Vermont today.
Vermont, okay.
Yeah, they'll take care of Vermont.
I'm concerned about Kansas State's University of California Irvine Anteaters matchup.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about that. I know you were talking about that earlier.
I'm nervous about
it. I mean, you guys did lose. What happened?
Dean Wade.
What happened to Dean Wade?
He's got a foot injury again. Same thing happened last year. Kept him out of the tournament. Now we did make a run to the Grade Eight last year without Dean Wade.
So did Florida State.
So we can do that. It's going to be tough this year.
Well, if you want to watch some real basketball, the CBI, it's below the NIT.
Yes.
Your Bulls, USM qualified. They did.
They were down 25
to Stony Brook last
Stony
night.
Stony Brook.
Came back,
I was,
beat
I
them
thought
in
that
overtime.
Was the NIT, but
basketball
it wasn't
Basketball is
NIT?
Back in Tampa. Yeah. No, it's a CBI.
There's three
NCAA
tournaments?
This was your negative one of USS rebuild under Brian Gregory.
Right.
So they highly overperformed, made their way into, the CBI, below the NIT, and big comeback against Stony Brook.
I did see that on Twitter last night. My good friend Derek Sharp is handling a lot of USF athletic. I forgot what he does now, but he left 620 and he's
a big wig USF.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I know no one's listened the last 10 minutes, and that's okay. So
new SR's Fab 5 tomorrow.
New SR's Fab 5 coming up on Friday. Go check out some of the stuff we put out this week. We did a roundtable yesterday, which was we all picked our favorite Buccaneer signing so far, so go read that and add yours in there as well. Plenty of new stuff every day on PeterReport.com.
And Mark, sure, Mr. Jetsetter, you're flying out to Arizona on Sunday for the NFL owners meeting out
there. Yeah, I'm already stressing. I'm already taking Xanax, and it's only Thursday. I thought for sure, you know, that I would be like on one of those planes that have like three rows of seating.
Oh, there's
and
so
a
much
lot
roomier
room.
Now, let me tell you.
Oh, my God. I looked at the actual plane that I'm on and actually YouTubed the videos of the inside of it, and I'm already having a panic attack. It's 50-50 I leave Tampa on Sunday. I may be calling you to fill in.
I really think you should go because you're going to be meeting with the Glazers there.
I know.
Bruce Arians.
But
Jason
here's
Light.
The deal. This is the
just
first time
on the
I've,
plane.
It's first time I leave at 6:49 in the morning on Sunday.
Yeah, some,
you can't drink that early.
Sure you can.
Maybe I just won't stop drinking from Saturday night.
Have a Bloody Mary or two.
Mimosas.
Yeah.
I've always flown with somebody. I've never flown by myself, so I'm a little nervous. But I guess, you know, enough medication, I'll get through it. It's only a five-hour flight there, but at least it's direct.
Notice how I picked the 2.5-hour flight to Indy, right, as we were drawing straws.
Yeah, I didn't really
I'll
think
take
this
the combine
through.
Trip.
Of course, you know, again, I'm going to be hanging out with the owners at the Biltmore, and you were in 4-degree weather.
It was 24-degree weather.
Same thing.
That was the kicker. That's where I got Mark. I said, listen, one of us is going to the combine. The other one's going to sunny, warm Arizona. Yeah. I have a winter coat.
I'm not
you
good
don't.
At geography, so I didn't really realize how far Arizona was. It's almost to Hawaii.
So check out our coverage, Mark's coverage from the NFL owners meeting out there. We'll have,
if I make it,
Bruce Arians, Jason Light interviews, and Joel Glazer as well. So
I literally had a dream about a plane crash the other night.
Well, hopefully you weren't in it.
No, I wasn't. Bubba the Love Sponge, of all people. That was the dream. He crashed in Turkey Creek, Florida. I swear to you, it was the strangest dream ever, but it's a true story.
I would say lay off the meds right now. Save those for when you fly.
Yeah.
And we'll end the podcast right now. How about
all right,
that?
We will end the podcast for Taylor Jenkins, for Matthew Matera, for Scott, I almost said Scott Brantley, but we'll call him Scott Reynolds.
I am Scott Reynolds.
I think I'm Scott Brantley. I'm Mark Cook, saying we'll see you next week with another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out.
Out. Out.